I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, December 21st, 2017. I'm Lisa Brady. The president calls the newly passed tax bill a Christmas present for Americans. But will homeowners agree?
In the real estate area, I'm a little concerned. It's like any other bill that's passed. There's good and there's bad and there's the ugly.
I'm Dave Anthony. The right is worried that the Justice Department and the FBI lean left.
This was a level of bias that you rarely see.
And I'm Tom Shalhoub. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
President Trump is hailing the tax overhaul as historic.
It's the largest tax cut in the history of our country, and reform, but tax cut. Really something special.
Vice President Mike Pence, also part of the celebration on the White House South Lawn after yesterday's final passage in the House.
Merry Christmas, America.
But is it really a lump of coal for homeowners? It limits or removes some long-standing deductions, including state and local property taxes.
A couple of things. The property, state, and local income taxes, there is a combined of a $10,000 deduction limit.
Bob Massey, host of The Property Man on Fox Business Network.
So, if you have a couple homes, okay, you're capped at $10,000. And that, particularly with New York, New Jersey, Florida, California, the high areas where these people, you know, where houses are very expensive, property is very expensive, they're capped at $10,000 deduction limit. So basically, I think what they're doing here is saying, listen, the federal government will give you up to 10 grand, but it's up to states to take care of the rest. If the state wants to pass a law that's going to allow certain deductions, it's going to be the benefit of the citizens in their state, that's fine. But we have done enough as a federal government through all this lending process and everything else that enough is enough, and we're not going any further.
There's also another form of interest, I believe, that can no longer be deducted, the home equity line of credit. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, that the home line of credit, the equity loan, will no longer be deductible. Now, you know, the ultimate decision here is when you look at this, I say it's tax reform, obviously. I think in the long run, it's like any other bill that's passed. There's good and there's bad and there's the ugly. In the real estate area, I'm a little concerned, and I'm hoping that because it's reported that since 2006, we've had the highest growth on home sales since 2006, and there's a 5.6% existing home sales that surged, which is crazy. I mean, that's a tremendous growth, but I'm concerned about some of these issues we're talking about.
Ryan Alexander is president of Taxpayers for Common Sense. She says not being able to deduct the interest on home equity loans will probably change the way people use those loans.
In the past, home equity loans have been used for consumer spending, for, you know, not just renovations, but lots of different ways for people to, you know, quote unquote, take cash out of their house. That probably will change. I'm sure it won't go away altogether. Sometimes people will need to do that, but it'll be a little more expensive to do that because we won't get the deductibility of the interest.
That could also affect a lot of retirees who've paid off their mortgages and used the equity in their home for things like travel. But Alexander isn't so concerned about the potential impact on the overall housing market because the new cap on mortgages eligible to deduct interest is so high, $750,000.
You know, I think when the realtors and builders say that this is very damaging to the housing market, I think that's an overstatement. I think that, you know, the vast majority of Americans do not have a loan that exceeds $750,000. And will people who are buying million-dollar and multi-million-dollar homes do different math? Yes. But the price of housing is always going to be about supply and demand. I think this will have the same type of effect that a change in interest rates would have.
She's more concerned about the bill being passed so quickly.
We're going to have to kind of comb through and not just see what every provision means, but how they work together. And I would expect there to be a significant technical corrections bill coming down the road because I don't think there's been time to do that.
So, Bob, do you think the underpinnings of the economy and the housing market, the way it's been going, will be able to absorb the changes from this, that the pros could outweigh the cons?
If the trickle-down effect happens, and if the C corporations are reduced down to 21%. And if the CEOs of this country invest their money in growth, growth is going to mean employment, which is going to mean people will have the ability to buy and buy a home and buy real estate. I think sort of as a byproduct of all of this, that's how it will still keep its zest and growth. And the other thing is, there is something to be said about attitude in our country. And, you know, during the Obama administration, although I'm one of these kind of guys that I didn't agree with his politics, but once he was elected president, I respected the position as opposed to what we see today. The bottom line is the fact there wasn't a feeling amongst real estate investors as well as business investors that there was an attitude of growth or that somebody was there that really cared about the success of businesses.
The government's always encouraged home ownership. It's when it's always been, you know, put up there on a pedestal as something to strive for, part of the American dream. Do you think that's changed?
I think it's changed from the perspective of people. I think there's two different visions we have to look at. Number one, through the eyes of Americans that really got their brains beat in during the real estate crisis. They basically lost everything. And those men and women that lost everything, they went back and they started rebuilding and they rented. And then after a period of years that their credit came back, they got the urge to own again because now they realize they got through it and they want to own again. So you're seeing this surge in ownership. But I don't think, particularly with the millennials, for example, are buying more in urban and suburban areas. The baby boomers like myself, we're ingrained from the great generation that home ownership is an extension of who we are. So there is this sort of demarcation of attitude based on generations. But I think when all is said and done, does it make people feel good to own their own home? Yes. Does the average person on the street really understand this idea of capping this and capping that is going to affect them? No. What they're going to look to in America is going to be, is there an increase in my paycheck? Is it something that's laughable or something that's substantive? And number two, is this break to those people that have successful business going to trickle down and increase employment, which therefore will increase real estate investments in our country?
Lately, because the mortgage rates had been coming down and there'd been more home buying and there started to be a problem with a shortage of inventory and prices going up. Do you think, I mean, nobody wants to see the market tank, certainly, but could there be a little bit of a silver lining if all of this has an effect of bringing prices back down a little bit?
Yes. If you right now had a house for $250,000 appraised in Las Vegas and you listed for that, you're going to have 10 bids. It's probably going to sell for $300,000. So the supply and demand is there now. I have investors coming to me all the time and saying, Bob, should I buy now? Let me tell you something, man. You know, you got to understand that this shortage is not going to last forever. So is there going to be another bump, another bubble? Yeah, to some extent there will be. Will it be more controlled than before? Yes, it will be. But one thing I will tell you, that if the average American family can fit into their budget a monthly mortgage payment again and have their name on title to the property, they'll do it again.
Bob Massey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for thinking of me. I appreciate it.
This is Tom Shalhoub with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
For Democrats, Robert Mueller has become a household name. The special counsel probing Russian campaign interference in President Trump. Republicans suddenly think they may have some of their own. Bruce Ohr, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, and Lisa Page, all caught up in congressional probes into alleged anti-Trump bias.
The FBI and the Justice Department were against him, and still he prevailed. Still the American people said, we don't care about, we're making that guy our next president. We're putting him in the Oval Office. To me, that's the real story here.
GOP Congressman Jim Jordan, so who are these people Republicans want investigated? We begin with Bruce Ohr.
He was stripped of that original title, Associate Deputy Attorney General.
James Rosen is Fox News' chief Washington correspondent.
It turns out that he withheld from superiors at DOJ his secret meetings that he held last year in 2016 with the two men most responsible for the so-called dossier, the collection of salacious and unverified allegations against Donald Trump and his associates that was bankrolled by the Democrats the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's campaign provided to the FBI in the summer of 2016, and according to Republican lawmakers, was used as the basis to justify foreign surveillance on a Trump campaign associate, Carter Page.
So Orr meets when with these Fusion GPS people? Is it after Donald Trump is elected?
Right. Fusion GPS is the opposition research firm that compiled this salacious dossier against then-candidate Trump, using funding from Hillary Clinton's campaign and the DNC and input from Russian sourcing. And Fusion GPS was founded by a man named Glenn Simpson. Bruce Orr secretly met with Glenn Simpson about 2 weeks after the election. We were the first to disclose. And Mr. Simpson of Fusion GPS had hired a former British spy to compile the dossier, as I say, with Russian input, named Christopher Steele. And Fox News was the first to disclose that Bruce Orr met before the election with Christopher Steele. What's more, Fox News was the first to disclose that Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie Orr, an academic expert on Russia, actually was working for Fusion GPS through the summer and fall of 2016. So it's pretty explosive.
What role do we know, if she had any, in the anti-Trump dossier?
We have confirmed that Nellie Orr did indeed work on the Trump project. Exactly what she did has not been disclosed to us yet, but we understand that both Bruce and Nellie Orr remain the focus of intense investigation, possibly as early as next week, the subject of subpoenas by House investigators.
Bruce Orr was supposed to be questioned in private by the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday. It might happen today. Tuesday, the House Intel Committee, led by Republican Trey Gowdy, questioned Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe behind closed doors. Presumably, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were a big focus. FBI officials were having an affair during the campaign and exchanged anti-Trump texts as well as pro-Clinton messages.
When Strzok said the vote should be 100 million to zero, what he's saying is he can't think of a single one of his fellow citizens that would vote for Donald Trump. And then you add that, and Lisa Page said, well, you know, maybe you stuck around, maybe you're in this position to save the country. And his response was, I can save the country in a lot of different ways. Unprecedented bias.
But Democrats, like Congressman Jerry Nadler, don't think the texts are a big deal.
Peter Strzok did not say anything about Donald Trump that the majority of Americans weren't also thinking at the same time. And second, in a testament to his integrity and situational awareness, when the Office of the Inspector General made Mr. Mueller aware of these exchanges, he immediately removed Mr. Strzok from his team.
Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe endured a marathon of questioning by investigators for the House Intelligence Committee on Tuesday, well into Tuesday night. And some important material has come from those interviews, but also a lot of conflicts with previous testimony. Andrew McCabe, as Deputy Director of the FBI, was very high on the list of interviewees for the House Intelligence Committee for a number of reasons. McCabe first surfaced as a figure of controversy after it was disclosed that his wife, a candidate for state office in Virginia, had benefited from nearly $500,000 in campaign contributions from an organization that was controlled by the Virginia governor, Terry McAuliffe, a very close, powerful ally of Bill and Hillary Clinton. And then a few months after that, Andrew McCabe began overseeing the FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's private server. Moreover, we've all heard recently about Peter Strzok, the high-ranking FBI official who was removed from the staff of the special counsel, Robert Mueller, looking into alleged collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin, after it was disclosed that Mr. Strzok had exchanged thousands of text messages with a colleague, many of them very severe in their criticism of Donald Trump and very clear in their preference of Hillary Clinton to win the 2016 election. One particular text message from Peter Strzok to his FBI colleague in particular aroused the interest of investigators. It was sent in August of 2016, not long after the FBI received that dossier and started its investigation of the Trump campaign. And that text message from Peter Strzok to his colleague said, in essence, I'm paraphrasing but faithfully, it said, I want to believe in the path you laid out in Andy's office, that there's no way that he, meaning Donald Trump, gets elected. But I don't think we can take that risk, and we need an insurance policy similar to what you have when in the unlikely event that you might die before you're 40.
And that's one of a lot of messages between Strzok and Lisa Page, another FBI official. There was a lot of anti-Trump stuff back and forth, pro-Hillary Clinton stuff back and forth, which is the basis for the Republicans calling for, in some cases, a second special counsel, or at least to say, hey, there's a lot of bias here that we need to uncover.
Right. And the reference to the meeting and the scenario and the insurance policy, all of that having occurred in Andy's office, led investigators to believe that Andy was Andrew McCabe, the deputy director of the FBI. And so that was a focus of his 7 hours of questioning before the House investigators on Tuesday night.
Democrats have said, look, everybody has a bias. It doesn't mean that you can't do your job. What other arguments are Democrats using with McCabe or Bruce Orr?
Well, they principally return to the allegation that there was some kind of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin, which after a year and a half or so of investigation has so far not produced any concrete evidence of that. But then as well,
They'll say, though, that Mueller got a couple of guys who are lying to the FBI. There must be something.
Right. And generally speaking, investigators will tell you that the most severe charge you have on which to convict or secure a guilty plea from an individual is lying to an investigating officer. That's generally not that substantive. In other words, it doesn't prove underlying collusion necessarily. In any case, when it's brought up that there hasn't yet been any firm, tangible evidence of collusion developed, Democrats have switched to something else entirely, which is that they allege that President Trump, in his conversations with the former FBI director, James Comey, his decision to fire James Comey, obstructed justice in trying to derail the probe into alleged collusion with Russia. And so that remains a focus of Democrats. And I'm told that even in the interrogation of Andrew McCabe, the deputy FBI director, Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee tried to enlist McCabe to help them prove an obstruction case against the president, but met with no real success there.
How much fatigue is there out there? Story like this dates back to the investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails, back to the campaign again, and you have people saying, I don't want to deal with this anymore. We've got to move on.
You ask if how much fatigue is out there. Presumably you mean
public,
in the general public. Let's start with right here between you and me. I'm fatigued with the thing, you know, but it's a fascinating story.
But you're paid to follow it.
Yes. It is a story with multiple components. Peter Strzok, the FBI official who was sending all of those anti-Trump, pro-Hillary Clinton messages, participated in the questioning of Hillary Clinton by the FBI in that email investigation. He is said to have been instrumental in watering down James Comey's original draft for his final statement on the case in July 2016 to move the language away from that which would pose real serious legal problems for Hillary Clinton to more innocuous language. So right now, the Inspector General of the FBI is reviewing Peter Strzok's role in the Hillary Clinton investigation. Peter Strzok was also one of the agents who, or the officials at the FBI who participated in the questioning of General Michael Flynn. And it was Flynn's statements in that session that led to his guilty plea. And then you have Mr. Strzok also on the staff of the special counsel investigating alleged Russia collusion. And it's sort of like Watergate on steroids in terms of the sheer number of players, the time involved, the time frames involved, and the involvement of so many different agencies. It's a lot to keep up with. You know, we follow it, so you folks at home don't have to. And to see my latest report on it, you can always check in with Special Report with Brett Baer, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, weeknights.
Thank you very much. James Rosen, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Dave.
Download The One with Greg Gutfeld.
I have a feeling tonight I'll probably be eating mortadella on crackers while drinking a Pinot Noir in the backyard.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tom Shalhoub.
What's on your mind?
This week, the New York Times reported on something that many Americans have long suspected, that our government has been on the lookout for UFOs. The Defense Department has never really acknowledged the existence of the program, but it was reported that as much as $22 million in federal money was spent on this search for spacemen. Whether you believe this is a waste of your taxpayer money or not probably has to do with whether or not you believe there's life on other planets. I grew up watching films like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., and as a kid, I was fascinated with the possibility of encounters with alien life. Then I learned from science about just how big our universe is, with billions of galaxies, each filled with billions of stars, and planets spinning around each one. A septillion of them, in fact. Many scientists suggest to us that it would be arrogant to assume that we were the only beings in this vast universe. But science has also shown us something else. what a rare and improbable thing life on Earth really is. The many conditions that had to be met to create this planet and the life on it are staggering. We are basically a miracle. And as my friend, author Eric Metaxas, has said, the more we learn about the universe, the more many of us feel that science itself is increasingly making the case for God. I believe in God, but whether you do or not, I really don't see it as arrogant to think that we're alone in the universe. Actually, I think the opposite. I feel a great deal of humility as I look up to the vast expanse of space and consider that we're alone here on our tiny, fragile planet. It's kind of hard to feel self-important when you're one in a septillion. I'm Tom Shalhoub.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.